All right. My plan is to wrap up our study of John the Baptist. I'll let you know who we're going to deal with next week. John the Baptist is, now remember, we're kind of here in the next few individuals that we look at. It'll be a kind of shorter lessons like this one. I don't know how many lessons we've had. What is this, about the fifth one on John? Something like that? Fourth or fifth? I don't think any more than that, I don't believe. But anyway, that will be the nature of it. And I'm still contemplating doing Paul. I always thought from the beginning I'd do Paul, but I'm not quite sure yet if I will. If I do, that won't be a short one, obviously. but kind of hard to go through Bible characters and not deal with Paul. He's one of the most significant Christians ever, and so I'll give that some thought. But he's not coming next for sure. So, all right. So we're dealing with John the Baptist. Let's remember that John is, of course, very impressive. We knew that from the very start, from Matthew chapter 11, when Jesus referred to him as the greatest man up to that point. Like when you stop and think of the significance of that statement, that there was never anyone greater than John the Baptist up until then. Like, you just think of all of the Old Testament worthies that would include, including some of the ones that we have studied, like Abraham and Joseph and Moses and so many others, like David and Elijah, of course, and the list goes on. And they were all great in their own right. And Moses is a biblical giant, so to speak. But John the Baptist, according to Jesus, was greater than all of them. And so I don't know that we could really grasp the significance of that statement with him. But turn your Bibles over to Matthew chapter 6. And we want to wrap up what we were looking at last week. This, of course, deals with the death of John the Baptist. And so we'll wrap this up. And then we'll conclude by just looking at some lessons that we can learn from John the Baptist, some things that we can and should apply to our own lives. But you remember there at verse 14, then King Herod heard of it, that is, the fame of Jesus is now being spread abroad, for Jesus' name had become known. And remember that Herod is there in Tiberias, in the palace, so he's kind of isolated and hadn't really heard about all the things that Jesus was doing until now. And so now he's getting reports, and the reports vary. It says that some said John the Baptist has been raised from the dead. That is why these miraculous powers are at work in him. But others said he is Elijah, and others said he is a prophet like one of the prophets of old. But you notice that verse 16 says, but when Herod heard of it, he said, John, whom I had beheaded, has been raised. So he, right away, his mind went to John. He believed it would, no matter what the other people concluded. Again, at first some said it might be John the Baptist. I know it's Elijah. Well, no, one of the, no, he said, no, it's John all right. He believed it was John. And the reason for that, as we said last week, is that he felt a whole lot of guilt, because by this point he had already put John the Baptist to death. John is dead by this point. But now he gets to, Mark gets to thinking about that, writing about that, and so kind of explaining why Herod would be so convinced this is John the Baptist. And again, it centers around his guilt. Verse 16 says, for it was Herod who had sent and seized John and bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother's Philip's wife. And if you take a quick look over at Luke chapter 3, you see when of course, that happened. And as I pointed out, I think last week, you just notice that was all Herod. It was his idea to arrest John. John was saying things he didn't like, And so he seized him. And we see that in Luke chapter 3, verse 18 says, "So with many other exhortations, he," that is John the Baptist, "preached good news to the people." And so this explains why John was so popular at this time. He was preaching the good news. The Messiah is coming. The kingdom of God is at hand. And so that now, you know, we have seen he was a straightforward preacher. He didn't care about impressing people or being popular, any of those kind of things. He told people what they needed to hear. And he did that consistently. And yet, because he had, again, the other side of that was the good news that the Jews were waiting and waiting and waiting for, and that is the Messiah is coming. And so he was very, very, very popular. But verse 19 says, because of, again, his straightforwardness, says, "But Herod, the tetrarch, who had been reproved by him for Herodias, his brother's wife, and for all the evil things that Herod had done." And so you notice that. It wasn't just the fact that John the Baptist, you know, it seemed like every time he was in a situation where he was around Herod, he would remind him, you know, you're in an unlawful marriage. You shouldn't be having your brother's wife. But it wasn't just that. He was exposing all the evil that Herod was doing. And we don't have time even to talk about all of that. He was involved in so many different things. Now, go back over to Mark chapter 6 then. And so this is what Mark is referring to here. He says again, verse 17, "For it was Herod who had sent and seized John and bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because he had married her. For John had been saying to who?" To Herod. He went gossiping, did he? Was he? He went right to Herod. Now, we don't know. There's different ideas about how all this took place. Did he have private meetings with Herod? It could have been. He probably did some things in public, even. It could have been a combination of those things. But regardless, he didn't go around telling people. He didn't go to the Pharisees. He went right to Herod, and he, as he was saying, the idea there is that it was repeated. Like, he kept on saying. And so he was really stressing Herod out about it all. And there was a part of Herod that wanted him dead. But there was a part of Herod that really respected John the Baptist. And so he was emotionally mixed. But not Herodias. She wasn't mixed at all. She just wanted the man dead. And so it goes on, verse 19, "And Herodias had a grudge against him and wanted to put him to death, but she could not. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a righteous and holy man, and he kept him safe. When he heard him, he was greatly perplexed, and yet he heard him gladly." And so that really gives you that idea of how Herod is feeling. He's perplexed. The Greek word there can mean several different things. Sometimes it literally meant without resources. But sometimes it could have the idea of being in despair. And so as you look at the context, it seems like what is meant, he's hearing John the Baptist. He can't really answer him. He doesn't have any answers to give him. He knows John is telling the truth. He's feeling guilty and convicted. And so when you feel like that, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, when someone's telling you something you don't really want to hear, sometimes there's a little anger involved in that too. So, you know, John the Baptist is getting on his nerves. But at the same time, he knows this is a good man. He's a righteous man. And so he respected him. And so he heard him gladly. It was just, you know, he was all over the place with that. But he wanted, because he was a righteous man, he wanted to protect him, wanted to make sure that Herodias didn't go behind his back and command the guards to kill him or anything like that. So he did his best to keep him safe. But then at verse 22, it says an opportunity came when Herod, on his birthday, gave a banquet for the nobles and military commanders. Those, the word there, it meant someone who commanded 1,000 men. And so you're talking about people with clout here. These military people were individuals with clout. The leading men of Galilee. In fact, they're all at the banquet. For when Herodias' daughter came in and danced. Now, this is where you really start to see again the nature, the character of Herod. Like, he's just a terrible man. And if we went through all of the things that we know of and extra biblical material about Herod, there's a lot we know about him and the murders he has committed and things of that nature. He's just a terrible individual. Well, this kind of puts it in perspective here. And it's not just him. What about Herodias? Like, what kind of mother is she? Because when it says here, this is something that was would hardly ever take place for a young woman like this, really a young girl. The word there that says that is translated daughter there really meant a young daughter. It probably she's a teenager, and so she's now you know what kind of dancing you think she was doing? Not good, is it? Scholars and commentaries are all. I don't think there's a dissenting voice in it that it was a provocative kind of dance that would have involved just sinful movements and. All of that. It was meant to please the men. And there's no question but that Herodias has put her up to this. Now who, and by this time in the banquet, of course, the men had been drinking and little intoxicated, puts us in mind of Esther again in that situation. But what kind of mother would put her daughter in that kind of situation? And then if you were Herod and your stepchild, teenager, comes out and dances like that, who knows how she was attired, you know, and what does it say about him? What was his response? Like if it was you, your stepdaughter, and all of a sudden she comes out of nowhere and starts dancing, probably immodestly apparelled and dance in a provocative way. You'd probably want to put a stop to that quickly as you could, wouldn't you? Not this heathen. What did it say about him? It pleased him. Now, you know, what kind of man is that? He was pleased just like all the other men at the banquet there. And so just has a whole lot about the kind of individuals that we're dealing with in Herod and Herodias. And so, but nevertheless, it says that she danced and it pleased Herod and his guest. And the king said to the girl, ask me for whatever you wish and I will give it to you. And he vowed to her, whatever you ask me, I will give you up to half of my kingdom. Well, he's just boasting there. That is nothing but talk. Because the fact of the matter is, the only authority that Herod had. Now, he had a lot of authority in his realm amongst the Jews. But that's as far as it went. He couldn't give his kingdom away if he wanted to. He was the tetrarch of Galilee. He controlled that area. But the only reason he controlled it is because the Romans gave it to him and allowed him to do it. He could, like, you know, we've read again in Esther and Daniel and things. We've seen where these real kings who were powerful could, they didn't mean it literally, but could offer someone half their kingdom if they wanted to. They had the power. Herod knew he didn't have the power to do that. He's just doing this as a show in front of his guests. And, you know, he looks like a big shot and all of that. Really, he only is over small territory, and only because the Romans allow him to control it. And so, but this sounds real good. Sounds like he's somebody important and with clout. I'll give you whatever you want. Half of my kingdom. Well, it says, and she went out and said to her mother, "For what should I ask?" And she said, "The head of John the Baptist." And she came in immediately with haste to the king and asked, saying, "I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter." And the king was exceedingly sorry, but because of his oath and his guest, he did not want to break his word to her. So again, you see just all this kind of, what, really? Wait a minute. You're going to murder an innocent person. And the only reason why you're not going to do it is because you made a promise to your stepdaughter and people heard it and you don't want to go back on that. And so instead of maybe your guests thinking something negative about you or whatever, you don't have the power you think you whatever. Instead, you'll behead a person. And that was Herod, and he did. And that was the death of John the Baptist. And so his story then, really, when you stop and think about it, is very brief. And I suspect from a worldly standpoint, most people would conclude that his story was basically a failure, that he really didn't become someone who was great. He instead ended up losing his life, and just the way he lived in the wilderness and all of that, what a tragedy. Well, we know from a biblical standpoint, it was far from any of that. He was highly successful. And he did exactly what God sent him to do. And so he really fulfilled the words of Jesus. He was a great man, but tragically died in his 30s, a very brief life. He's not on the scene very long at all, but what a great work he accomplished. And so we should all very much appreciate John the Baptist. It was about this time here when the disciples, we talked about Jesus sending them out on a missionary journey, supplementing his work. Remember, this is the third circuit of Galilee that Jesus is on. And now the disciples, the apostles, they come back and they give Jesus the news that John the Baptist has been put to death. And so it's kind of a sad situation, obviously, there. But that brings his life to a close. So what do we learn from John the Baptist? What are some practical things that we have studied in these various passages that we really ought to imitate ourselves? And we'll look at several things here for the rest of our time. Number one, we know his main mission. What was his main mission? To prepare the way to Christ. And he did that very thing. He led individuals to Christ. Remember, we read the one passage where there were some people who now were listening to Jesus, and they believed Jesus because it says they had been baptized by John. And what that meant was not just because they had been baptized, but because they would have been of the group who heard John and their hearts were pricked and they confessed their sins, were baptized, all of that. And so they, John had an influence on them. The Pharisees, the same passage says the Pharisees, they didn't. They were not baptized of John. And so they weren't accepting Jesus. And so, but John the Baptist had a great influence on a whole lot of people. He was leading people to Christ. And that was exactly his mission. That was his job. What's our job? Lead people to Christ. And we have, of course, the Great Commission in Matthew chapter 28. Go out and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's a very, you've heard, often heard me say, that's the marching orders of the Church of Christ, of every Christian. Not just preachers, it's not just a few, it's not just the elders. Every one of you has a responsibility to take it to whenever you have the opportunity to spread the word and to teach people, making disciples and baptizing people. And when the church as a whole understands that responsibility, if we as a whole could say, I'm going to look at John the Baptist and how bold he was and straightforward. He just preached the word and had great results. And we need to be like him. Just think how the church would grow if we were really about that business. We need to stop and think. I think now, you know, we've kind of let things get away. I think it was Jesse who said not too long ago, remember the cards? You know, the pandemic and everything has messed us all up. But, you know, we can only use that as an excuse for so long, can't we? We still have those cards. We need to be passing them out to people. And we need to be talking to people. And some people have more opportunities than others. But don't miss the fact that we are to be fishers of men. That we are to be preachers of the gospel, all of us. And to do what we can to win souls to Christ. We were saved in part to save others. And we need, John was focused on that mission from the start to the end. And that's what we need to be. We lose track too often. And we sometimes get more bogged down on just other things. Like even the building and physical things and sometimes within. You know, they used to say we become keepers of the aquarium instead of worrying about all the fish out there that need to be brought in. And, you know, we just need to think. Be influenced by John the Baptist. His main mission, prepare the way to Christ. And he did that. He led people to Christ. And we need to be about that same thing. Yeah, Autumn. Right. That's right. But in a lot of times, you know, I don't mean to, it's not a sinister kind of thing. Like I've often said, so, you know, just the drudgery of everyday life gets in our way. And I have a sermon I sometimes preach, good things that keep people out of heaven. And, you know, you stop and think about that. That, you know, sometimes it's not the evil, the wicked things. Sometimes, you know, Christians get in a moral mess and just put their guard down and go off into sin. But, you know, a lot of times, more than that, in a local congregation like that, like this, it's just life, allowing life to get in our way. And it pushes God to the back of our lives. And we end up not doing the things we know we ought to do. And preaching the gospel to the lost is one of them. But, you know, it's even broader than that. Just we get caught up with the physical things of life. Why Paul said, seek those things that are above, not on things that are on this earth. Why he told Timothy, remember, a good soldier doesn't do what? Doesn't get entangled in the things of this world. Because that can happen to all of us. It does happen. I know it happens to me sometimes. It happens to all of us. We just get caught up with life. And we need to stop and remind ourselves, why are we here? When we obey the gospel, what was that all about? It was about seeking, serving God from that point forward. And a real part of that is helping other people to be saved. All right, number two, another thing with John the Baptist, when you think of him, as we have seen, John was different, wasn't he? You remember there in Matthew chapter 3, the very first passage we were looking at, verse 4 in that context, that John, he wore a garment of camel's hair and a leather belt around his waist. And his food was locusts and wild honey. Like, John was a different kind of guy. And it wasn't just his attire and his diet. He preached differently. The scribes and Pharisees, who were the religious leaders, the Sadducees, there was something. It's why he so many came out to hear him. Like, people were making, there's this fella, you ought to hear him preach. He's out in the wilderness. And he must have been a real dynamic preacher, but he was straightforward and telling people the way it was and what they needed to hear. And it's just different. He stood out. And you think about that with us. Should we be different? No doubt about it. We're a peculiar people. We should be. And I know First Peter 2, that verse 9, that really is probably not the best translation of the Greek word there. But in a real way, we are to be peculiar. We're to be viewed as a little odd or strange from most people in the world because our morals are different. Our standard of living is different. Like, you know the passage in Romans chapter 12 at verse 2, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And we need to make that not just an academic thing. Well, you know, I know what Romans 12:2 says. I can quote that. But no, we need to live that. Don't conform to this world. And the world, as you've heard me say before in passages like that, has to do with the realm of ungodliness. Everything that's unrighteous. He's not saying, listen, there's things, the fads and things that come and go that we emulate, and nothing wrong with that if it's not sinful. Like double breast suits might be in style. Nothing wrong with going out and buying one of those. I mean, there are a lot of things we do. Certain haircuts you get. And why do you get that? Well, you know, something in style. This is something anything wrong with that? No. But the things that are sinful in this world, the things that fall into that realm of ungodliness, that's the world that John says, love not the world, neither the things in it. Like, when it comes down to that world, that realm of ungodliness, we shouldn't sympathize with anything in it. We should love not the world. Don't conform to it. But that's always been a problem for the people of God. We have always struggled with not worrying about being popular, not going along with the crowd, giving in to peer pressure and all of that. Just it's always a problem. It's always a struggle. And a part of that is, don't be ashamed of who you are. Do you get any inclination at all that John at any point in time was ashamed of his mission? Never. He didn't care about the Pharisees and Sadducees when they came out. What was the first thing he said to them? Right, well, yeah, call them snakes, huh? You vipers. I know why you're here. And so he certainly, now most people, again, don't forget, they were the spiritual elite. And so most people would be thrilled that they came out to hear him preach. Like, wow, I'm really attracting not only a crowd, I'm attracting the important people in the community. You know, give them the best seat. Hey, make sure you let them sit up front. No, not John the Baptist. Right away, you vipers, you better bring forth fruit keeping with repentance. And so, you know, he wasn't worried about fitting in or anything like that. You don't worry about fitting in wearing garments of hair, do you? They care about that. That's exactly the way we should be. Don't worry about being popular with people, whether it's at school, on the job, or whatever it is. You want to talk about one of the things that stop us from preaching the gospel to others like we should? What are we worried about? Getting stoned? No, doesn't happen. In our country. What do I worry about? You worry if you preach the gospel, you're going to be arrested? Nope. Not in this country. I don't remember any preacher being arrested or any member of any church being arrested for trying to teach someone the gospel. But what are we afraid of? Attitudes. That's it. How people think about us. That's the only obstacle. Don't want to turn people off. Don't want to go, oh, you're one of them. You're one of those individuals. You're narrow-minded. You're a member of the... You know how many people truly are ashamed of being members of the Lord's church? That's a sad situation. And it should never be. We have to make sure that's not the case. We have to embrace the fact that we're different. And don't act like everyone else. You don't have to dress like everyone else when it comes down to things like immodest apparel. You don't have to use the same language everybody else is using. Are you amazed how many people, you know, you're out there in the world, and I'm amazed. You just hear people cursing and things, and sometimes, you know, it's young kids, and I mean, you know, man, I wish. But sometimes I hear someone out there, you know, someone who's no doubt a grandmother or something, like, really? Like, everybody, do you have to be like them? You don't have to be like people of the world. That's where we stand out. Don't be like that. Be different. John the Baptist was different. I tell you a third thing he was that we've kind of already hit on, but he is humble. He knew his place. Remember now, he does have a crowd. He has disciples. There's individuals following him. And he's loved by the people. And if you're not humble, that can intoxicate you, and you can end up embracing that and doing everything you can to get more disciples and for your fame to grow more and more. That would have messed everything up. What was his mission? Not to prepare the way for John the Baptist, but for Jesus. And he never forgot that. And he was humble enough to not let that get in the way. Remember what he said to his disciples? I must decrease, he must increase. And that, you know, humility, we can learn from that, can't we? There's several passages we don't have time now to look at over and over that emphasize, that exhort us to be humble, not to be prideful, not to be arrogant, not to be boastful, but to be humble. And we can learn from John the Baptist with regard to that. I'll give you another one quickly before the bell rings. You remember one passage. He was concerned with justice. Remember over I think it's the passage in Luke chapter 3, where the crowd was inquiring about him. And he said to them, you might recall, verse 10, Luke 3 at verse 10, it says, "And the crowds asked him, 'What then shall we do?' And he answered them, 'Whoever has two tunics is to share with him who had none. And whoever has food is to do likewise.' The tax collectors came and to be baptized. And he said, 'Teacher, what should we do?' And he said to them, 'Collect no more than you are authorized to do.' And then the soldiers came. But he was given the advice that he was given. The thing that he was telling them is, treat other people right. Stop being corrupt. Stop being dishonest. Stop hurting other people. Be just." Should we care about justice in society at large? Yes. The world's a mess, and there's, you know, there's not a whole lot that we can do. But we can care about it and speak out about it whenever we have the opportunity. That's how John the Baptist answered these individuals. But we can learn from that. We ought to be a just people and care about justice. And a fourth thing, of course, and this kind of, I don't have any passage, it's really his whole ministry that suggests this, and that is he would never, ever compromise his convictions. Ever. It didn't matter if he was talking to the people who came out to be baptized, or as we just saw, if he was talking to Herod. He wouldn't compromise. And we can never compromise with the truth, ever. It doesn't matter what the situation or the circumstance is. We have to always hold our ground. and that was John the Baptist. And then one more thing before the bell rings. And one of the things we have found with all of the individuals that we have studied, and we haven't said much about this with John the Baptist, but John was just a man, wasn't he? And so just like Abraham, and just like Joseph, and just like Moses, and even Esther, he wasn't perfect. And one scene that we have, we don't have time to look at it now, but you can look at it on your own, Luke chapter 7, about verse 18. You find that John begins to doubt whether Jesus is the Messiah. And he sent his disciples to him to ask him, are you the one, or are we waiting for another? And, you know, all kind of things have been said about that, whether he was really doubting or whether he did that for his disciples. No, he doubted. And if you understand his life in the context and what was going on with him, you can see why. He's in prison. Remember, he was in prison for over a year. We don't know exactly how long, but it had to have been over a year. And he came preparing the way of Christ. And you remember in Matthew 3, preaching the judgment that the Christ is going to, he's going to come and judge and all of that. And in the ministry of Christ, it really didn't go like that. Like Jesus didn't come. And of course, we know that Jesus is going to judge, but that's when he comes back the second time. During his ministry, Jesus didn't just come on the scene and just tell everybody in plain language, I'm the Christ. Sometimes he would tell his disciples, don't tell anybody this. Because everything was on God's timetable. And Jesus knew exactly what it was. But to John the Baptist, he's in prison and he has paved the way for the Messiah. Number one, I've been here a year. How come the Messiah, who is here to rescue all of us, he hadn't come and got me out of jail. Here I am. And I'm not hearing anything about him taking over and you know, getting us out from under the yoke of the Romans or anything like that. Are you really the one? And now, that was a momentary lack of faith with regard to that. And you go and read it for yourself because we don't have time. But read it for yourself. You'll see how Jesus answered that. He understood. He didn't even answer directly. He just performed a bunch of more miracles and told his disciples, go back and tell John what you have seen. And that would prove, yes, I am the one. And that's exactly what happened. And so, but the point of it is, as great as John was, sometimes we all struggle. Doubt might creep into any of your minds and probably has. Why hasn't this prayer been answered the way that I want? What's taking God so long to help me? And we all have moments like, doesn't mean that all of a sudden you're the devil. Doesn't mean you have completely lost your faith or anything. It's just, we're humans. And if John the Baptist, the greatest man who ever lived up to his time, if he could have the momentary doubt, why do you think you couldn't? Just be sure it doesn't persist when it comes. Think about the things that gave you your faith in the first place and just make sure you don't let it overtake you and overwhelm you and you end up being unfaithful. But don't beat yourself up when, you know, we all fall short from time to time. Because we're all human, and so was John the Baptist, just like all the other ones that we have studied. All right, that's about it. I don't think, or maybe, I see people, did the second bell ring again? Really? You guys can't help me out? Okay.